Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this wonderful event we're hosting here at LSE Ideas. So this is a event we're doing in cooperation with the UN Society at the LSE, the LSE-SU United Nations Society, which is one of the biggest societies in the student union and does so many wonderful things, as you can see on the banner there. And I've been told one of the best model UN societies in the world, if not the best, for sure. So I would like to state firstly that this event is recorded and will be available as a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, so it's part of the LSE strategy in the recent months to engage, to reach out to student societies and have this sort of events when we can speak about our common interests, and you can hear more about what we're doing here and engage in all sorts of ways. And this is part of a series of events that will lead up to the UN Diplomacy Ball this Friday, which is a very big event, which is proudly supported by the by LSE Ideas and sponsored. Many other foreign affairs, student societies from around London, UCL, King's College, LSE, and so on, are taking part in this event, and I'm sure some of you might be there. So this is part of a series of three events, which is the first one happening now, and there's a couple more this month. And it's all part of the strategy of engaging more with students and showing them how life in the university is, academic, think tank, and so on, how we engage with wider society and with other institutions. And now, Inside Ideas, it's what is it to work at a leading university think tank? Well, a few words about LSE Ideas. We just had our 10-year anniversary. We're in our second decade now. This is published recently, The History of Ideas, and it says all of our achievements, one of them being world's number two academic think tank in the world, and the first one in Europe for, I think, 8 of the last 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, 7 maybe. And it's a good achievement. It's a great achievement, and we're very proud to be part of this establishment. And let me introduce my colleagues here on the panel tonight. So Lisa ten Brinke is a research associate for the Dahrendorf Forum, and she also works in the recently established UN project at Ideas. She holds an MSc in International Relations from the LSE, in European Affairs, EU External Relations. Had an internship with Chatham House, which she recently completed. Well, she works on many, many wonderful events here, researching and publishing lots of nice projects that she's been working on. Gidon Gautel is in the China Foresight Project. He coordinates this project. He is in government and economics student at the LSE. He studied Mandarin and business at Tsinghua University in China. Also worked in advisory positions in Hong Kong and Shanghai, Chinese clients in Germany. Well, she's engaged in many things, such as comparative study of innovation, technology, and regulation in China and the West, also at the LSE. So, let's start with a few questions we have here. I open them to discussion. But first, before that, can I ask my colleagues to say a bit about their own projects and what they work on, how they coordinate their work and so on. So, Lisa, if you don't mind saying a few words about the Dahrendorf Forum and the UN project.
Of course. Hi, everyone. So, Vlad already introduced me. I'm Lisa ten Brinke, and I work as a research associate at LSE Ideas on two different projects. And what I enjoy a lot about that is that they're very different. So the first one is the Dahrendorf Forum, which is very much an established institution within LSE Ideas. It's existed for a couple of years. We work together with the Hertie School of Governance in Berlin. So it's really an exciting cross-European initiative. We focus naturally a lot on Brexit because that's what's happening. which is both depressing and fascinating at the same time. And the other sort of part of my job at Ideas is for the UN project. Vlad already mentioned, it's very young, very new. I brought actually the report we published. So this was 2 weeks ago. We published People, Profits, and Peace. And I contributed to it as well. And it sort of sets out sort of the framework that we hope to implement, first in a few trial locations in Colombia and hopefully later in Liberia and other places as well. So that's a short introduction of what I'm doing. Feel free to ask any questions during the Q&A, of course.
Guido?
Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. So as Vlad already introduced me, I'm Guido. I work on the China Foresight Project. And essentially what that does is we try to shed a light on China's domestic workings and its role in the world stage, and involve various stakeholders in making what China does and why it does it clearer to them, in order to help them operate.
A few words about myself. I'm Vlad Zigarov. I'm head of the Central and Southeast Europe program at LSE Ideas. It's also one of the younger programs. It's been established last year, and it's going pretty well, I have to say, but I'll speak about that more during the second question we have. Also, I'm a project associate in the Cold War Studies program, which is the first this program that established our think tank as a research center, I think 15 years ago. So it's a bit of the core of the establishment, and it's been ongoing for the last 15 years. So it's a very interesting mix of things to have in, I think we're ready to address the questions at this moment. So, first question, how does LSE Ideas as a think tank differ from other research centers and institutes at the LSE? Lisa, would you like to start addressing that question?
Sure. I think what's already sort of implied in that question is the general distinction between think tanks and research centers. I think for a lot of people, sort of outside of these institutions, it can be quite confusing what exactly the difference is. But I think once you work in it, it's really quite obvious. What I've noticed, for example, so as I said, I work for the Derendorf Forum, which is part of a think tank. And as the Derendorf Forum, we work together with, for example, the European Institute, which some of you might be familiar with. And I think that's a good sort of example to show the difference. So the European Institute is a well-established research institute, really focuses on long-term projects, focuses on academic study. And what we try to do is we also do research, but it's also really about this policy outreach, about trying to connect to policymakers, trying to connect to the media, try to be, policy relevant. And I think that is sort of what LSE Ideas in a broader sense is trying to do as well. So it is research, but it's in combination with linking that to the public debate and trying to get that debate going. And sort of one other thing maybe to say about LSE Ideas more specifically, I think what makes Ideas for me really cool and different from other places is that it tries to stay very broad in terms of its scope. It's actually very proud to have China Foresight, have a Europe project, UN project, a Cold War Studies project, and it constantly seeks to find new areas in the world to research, which might also be different from a research center that finds its specific focus and really dives into that. So maybe we try to keep it broad and create a platform of ideas at LSE Ideas, let's say.
Guido, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I would build on that by sort of talking a little bit about, first of all, who we are as an institution, and then also what we do. So the people, LSE Ideas is a very diverse organization. I think at any time I'm in the office, there's maybe 10 to 12 nationalities in there with me, and that creates considerable diversity, not just in the people, but as I said, the projects that are done, and the exchange of ideas, for which there are many opportunities. So I regularly sit in a room and get to hear about the research which other people at Ideas are doing, and that influences my own work. And I think that exchange of ideas is a major strength of Ideas itself. And then also, Ideas is a very young organization, which I think that's also a major asset. If you're looking at other think tanks outside LSE, I know I'm meant to be comparing it to institutions in LSE itself, but if you look at institutions like Chatham House, RUSI, they're definitely not as young as LSE Ideas itself. And if you do look into those institutions, the really cutting-edge work which is being done is usually done by younger people getting started, finding a niche, and really going for those very cutting-edge, very new niches. So I think that's what sets LSE Ideas apart in terms of its people. And then in terms of what it does, as already stated, it's very informative for policy and also the private sector. So China Foresight works a lot with people in finance, people in trade, to give them an understanding of what China does. And another way in which China Foresight is unique in that respect is that it seeks to give an understanding of China which takes an inside-out approach instead of viewing China as a black box, which is to be understood through a foreign lens. So yeah, I think those things are what makes LSE Ideas unique in my eyes.
I would agree with both of you on what you said, and I think all this diversity that's happening there, both in projects and in people, really managed to establish us. It's not a very old institution as Chatham House, which has 100 years, and others, but in 10, 15 years, we've managed to rank so highly on the international rankings. So I think it's part of this flexibility, but also seriousness of approaching things and widening the scope and so on. So yes, now going on to the second question. How much and in what ways does communication and collaboration with other organizations constitute a part of the work at LSE Ideas? Think tanks, governments, non-governmental bodies, and so on. If you don't mind, I can start by saying a few words about this. So speaking of my program, the Central and Southeast Europe program, it's established, I think, mid the autumn, September last year. And by this point, we've managed to, because why that region? It's an interesting region because it was, maybe in the last 10 years, overlooked by everyone because it was thought it would be very well, you know, caught in this Euro-Atlantic web. There's nothing to worry about in the region. You know, they're all on our way to Western democracy, liberalism, and so on. But as we've seen the last 10 years, things can go another way. So again, with its flexibility, Ideas started to focus on the problems of that region. And what we are doing now is creating a lot of collaborations with NGOs. For example, we have a foundation, the Ratio Foundation, which is the biggest one in Romania on democracy, rule of law, and so on. We have universities, University of Bucharest, Cluj. We're working on cooperation with the Central European University, but they're in a very difficult time at this moment because they have to relocate from Budapest to Vienna. We're doing the same with the Jagiellonian University in Krakow, institutions in Bulgaria, University of Belgrade, and so on. So by fostering this cooperation and opening channels with established institutions in the west of Europe, like Ideas, I think we think it's very important for the institutions there not to feel to feel left out or left behind or left by themselves. And by fostering this cooperation on a regional level, we can address all the regional problem, because at this moment some people think that it's a Romanian, a Bulgarian, a Hungarian, Polish problem, but it's not really that. It's quite a interconnected body, this region. So we are trying to address it as a compact. You know, the problems are regional. They're even wider than that. But these countries have a problematic moment, I think, and we're trying to do our best to preserve academic freedom, rule of law, human rights, an agenda. So it's quite a diverse agenda, so that's why we have so many cooperation starting. But that's my program. If you have to say anything about this to question two?
Yeah, I very much agree with what you said. I mean, I'm thinking from the perspective, I just took the Darendorf Forum as an example. So maybe now to say something about the UN project. So as Vlad already mentioned, the UN project is a relatively young project as well. And I think especially for young projects, it is crucial to communicate and collaborate with other organizations. I mean, the cynical view is maybe that it's because you really struggle by yourself because you're small and you need funding and you need to find resources. But a more positive explanation is that it also just really enriches the way you think. As an example, last year in December, we organized a film screening about a documentary called The Chocolate Case. And we did that together with the Dutch Embassy in London and United Nations Cinema. And it was just really great to get access to, you know, their databases of contact, their ideas about how to run an event. And it's just really interesting, yeah, to see what you can learn from that. You think you have it all figured out, but then there's all these different ways of approaching something. And so I think in the end, our event became a lot stronger. And just practically, we could, you know, easily fill the room with all the people that we could connect to. So it's both practical and, I guess, on a more ideological level, it's both enriching. And I mean, also the report that we mentioned, I think it's another example. We did that together with our research partners that are located all across Europe. Same thing, you know, they have years of experience looking at human security, peace building, conflict sensitivity, all with a slightly different focus. So when you bring that together, naturally the quality of your report gets better. So I think, yeah, in a way, it's in every sort of, also in business or in universities, it's important to collaborate. But I think especially maybe in the think tank industry, it's crucial because a lot of organizations are relatively small and very eager to do things. But then when they come together, they can actually, you know, really create big events and big initiatives. So that would be my view.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree in regards to collaboration enhancing the quality of a report. So, I mean, China Foresight came out with this, which is available online last year. And that was with the CIMB, ASEAN Research Institute, and about the Belt and Road in Southeast Asia. It was, and sort of working with those international partners really boosts the quality and the extent to which a report is received as well. So that was launched by Malaysia's Minister of Economic Affairs in Malaysia itself. And it had quite a considerable impact in terms of how it was received by actors in the region, but also in the UK and Europe who have interests regarding the Belt and Road. Just to add on what's already been said, China Foresight also works quite closely with the private sector. So recently we've been working with the ICBC Standard Bank quite closely to organize a couple of closed doors private discussion events where we're either bringing together various actors from the private sector to inform them about the motivations, implementation and implications of what China is doing on the world stage. And I think on top of that, what is quite valuable in terms of what is being done, we bring the policymakers together with the private sector. So there's, I think often there's areas of areas that lack clarity on both sides, and bringing them together in a way so that the private sector can understand how the government is approaching China, what is being agreed, how it's working in their interests, and the other way around, really has a big impact.
And now, question 3. How are LSE Ideas professionals managing and analyzing increasing uncertainty in international affairs? This is in keeping in touch with the Diplomacy Ball Navigating Uncertainties theme. So, Gidon, maybe you would like to start.
Right. So, from my perspective, in the time that I've worked at LSE Ideas, I guess I would sort of put the way in which we've tried to reduce uncertainty into three general categories. So firstly, we're opening up dialogue between various actors. Through our publications, we're trying to introduce certainty to actors who we can't work directly with. And also we try to increase public dialogue and collaboration in order to reach as many people as possible. So in terms of opening up dialogue, specifically between the government, public institution, and corporates, China is a major source of uncertainty for UK businesses and for the government. So being there to try and give some clarity as to what the internal processes of the country are, and what that means for how it's going to act on the world stage and how that it will affect businesses, definitely reduces uncertainty in that sense. In terms of our publications, I mean, so two of China Foresight's reports in the last year have been on the Belt and Road. And I think, at least in terms of China, giving China's actions on the world stage are often poorly understood. They're seen as quite nebulous, which often leads to suspicion and hostility. And I think shedding light on what exactly it is that these projects are doing and what the motivations behind them are reduces that uncertainty and helps various actors to deal with them. Then finally, public dialogue and collaboration. So we've tried to work quite closely with student groups as well at China Foresight. We've collaborated quite closely with the China Development Society, for example. And I think that opens up these discussions about reducing uncertainty, understanding China to students and members of the public who can't attend the sort of these closed doors discussions between policymakers and private sector actors. So yeah, I would say those are the three ways which I've experienced during my time here in which we try to reduce uncertainty.
Lisa?
Yeah, that was a really comprehensive overview. I think it's a really interesting question because it's like this uncertain time, on the one hand, it creates a lot of worries and a lot of uncertainty about where to go as a project and how to respond to these changes. At the same time, it is sort of the core of what we do, especially with the Dahrendorf Forum. I think, you know, the main thing of uncertainty is, of course, Brexit and what's going to happen. It can also sort of create situations that are actually, you know, very interesting and very engaging. I remember one time that we were having an event at Parliament, I think the morning after David Davis resigned as the sort of the Brexit minister. And during the meeting, you know, MPs were saying, okay, that was, you know, uncertainty, that was a very unexpected event, but that would, you know, not lead to any other resignations. And during the meeting, Boris Johnson resigned, which sort of, you know, is just one of the many examples of, yeah, where you really feel like, okay, I'm really in the middle of what's going on. So it can, in a weird way, be a very exciting time and a very, you know, if you're sort of a political nerd like I am, it is very interesting to look at all this stuff. Of course, on a more serious level, it can also be very difficult. You know, how do you plan events when speakers cancel last minute because they actually have to attend an important Brexit meeting? And how do you deal with that? I think all I can say is that we try to take it into account as much as possible. We try to always have a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. And I think it has made us more aware in a way of the importance, without, you know, patting ourselves on the back, but the importance of having think tanks and having research institutes, especially in this time, you know, of alternative facts and fake news. It's so important that you still try to separate facts from fiction, and that even though it's difficult and it's uncertain, it also makes you feel like it actually matters. Because if everything is predictable and goes according to political theory, then maybe our role would not be as important as it is today. So that's sort of the positive side of the whole equation, I would say.
I'll just want to add just a few things. I agree completely with what you're saying, and it's very true. I think on my program, for example, uncertainty can be managed by increasing the connectivity and cooperation. So with those countries specifically, in our region, because that would decrease the level of uncertainty by knowing what's happening on the ground, by understanding the issues from the people there, not just analyzing from a distance, but have professionals, academics and otherwise, in those regions, in those countries, giving you feedback, which you can, you know, afterwards digest and take an informed decision, be on top of things as they develop or even before they become reality. I think it's very important. The partners on the ground, and of course, another thing we're doing on the region is student trips. So students, young researchers from the LSE, from other institutions, we have started a program that's taking them. We're starting this year with the Grimshaw delegation trip to Romania, and they'll be meeting professionals, they'll be meeting former politicians, current politicians, diplomats, having workshops with university professors from and researchers from Romania, and then we would like to do it on a yearly basis and get more students involved, because I think it's very important to open up to this region and to other regions. I think it's a good model, and it gets students really involved, and they're offered a very good opportunity to understand how things happen and maybe why they happen and so on. And this is another one of our projects. So yes, I think it's one way to decrease the uncertainty in international affairs by increasing connectivity with your region of interest. I think our time is almost up. So before that, before I open the Q&A session, I would like to say that there are a few other events coming up, also related to the Diplomacy Ball. One of them is on the 14th of March, same time, Women, Peace and Security with Amnesty International Society, very interesting one. And on the 21st of March, from 6, European Parliament Election Panel 2019 with the Grimshaw Society. So we invite you, if you're interested, to take part, register for those two events too. Another question on procedure. You all have a small piece of paper on your seat. If you'd be so kind to fill it in and leave it on your way out, it would be very, very helpful to have your feedback on tonight. And, well, without further ado, I think we're ready for the questions. Please don't hold back. You've seen we'd like to talk a lot, so it'd be our pleasure to answer your questions. Just wait for the, please identify yourself and your affiliation, and wait for the microphone to arrive.
Hello, I'm Vanessa, and I just want to ask, and well, firstly, I want to thank you all for coming to speak to us. It's really comprehensive, and I've learned a lot from it. And I just want to ask Gidon, about your research in China specifically. And you mentioned how your research takes an inside-out approach rather than like looking from the lens of like Western perspective. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, like, what's the difference that you have observed through looking at like from a different perspective into the developments of China?
So you mean the differences in the two approaches?
No, as in like what sort of differences have you found out? Because the results is obviously different when you look at things differently.
So what differences have I observed between the outside perspective and the looking out perspective, do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think the key difference between when a looking inward perspective is taken and looking outward perspective is taken, that is that the political developments in China are generally, in terms of the internal machinations of the party and the key stakeholders, are generally underrepresented if you're taking an outside approach. And if you look at the reports that China Foresight has released, especially, I would advise you to look at the previous head of China Foresight's, her name is Dr. Yu Jie. She publishes reports regularly on in the press, and they consistently take into account the political actors in China and their relation to each other and their goals, instead of generally ignoring that, treating the party as a single homogenous entity which only has one will. And I think taking the inside-out approach respects the fact that the will of China doesn't particularly exist if you look at it on a closer level. There are lots of different interests, and they all affect each other in different ways, and that results in the way China acts on the world stage. And I think, yeah, that's the most important distinction between the outside perspective and the looking outwards perspective.
Thank you. Anyone?
Hi there. My name's Alex. Really insightful. I'm really glad I came as well. I just had more of a question regarding how work life kind of operates within the think tank itself and your experience in it. Just could you perhaps give a general kind of picture of what it looks like when you're coming in fresh as perhaps a graduate or an undergraduate, and sort of what the staffing looks like, how you choose to work on certain projects, is it chosen for you? Just a bit of insight into that, perhaps.
Lisa, would you like to start?
Yeah, of course. So maybe it's most insightful if I just tell you a bit about how I entered LSE Ideas and how I came to work there. So basically, I first applied to work for the Derendorf Forum. It was a 50% position, I think, which is immediately something, you know, to mention that, like, within think tanks, it can be quite challenging, you know, to find positions and to find full-time positions. And I think very often it's more about sort of finding your way in and taking that opportunity if you're, you know, if you're willing and able to do that. And I think for me, because I remember really being unsure of whether or not I should do that. I'm so happy I did, because I got in through that position, and then I heard of this other opportunity, another project, you know, looking for someone for 1.5 days per week, which is very often it happens like that in think tanks. It's a 1.5, 2 day per week kind of position, which is exactly what I was looking for. So I applied for that one, and then I sort of, you know, managed to get a full-time job out of it in total. And what I really like about the combination is that the Derendorf Forum, I think, for me, is a lot more research-based. So it means that I assist with a lot of research. I assisted on reports, currently working on a working paper, as we call them, together with a postdoctoral fellow at the Derendorf Forum. So that's mostly research skills. And I think for the UN project, it's been a lot more actually outreach, communication, building the project, you know, building databases, going to different meetings, trying to find partners, giving workshops. So more of a practical job in the end, I think. And that combination works really well. I don't know if that's kind of what you were looking for or more specific, but that's sort of generally what I do. And day to day, yeah, it does depend, of course. But it's a lot of, I would say it's a lot of event organization, research assistance, administration, you know, also needs to happen, and mostly just trying to find connections between the different things you do. I think that's the most exciting part of it, you know, trying to find a way to do an event with a partner that you know from somewhere else and trying to build it out, and in that way, you know, actually building a network. I think that's the most exciting bit for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I would probably address, I believe you asked about how projects work and whether you're assigned them. So in my experience, it's been quite a good balance. So there are certain projects, there are certain things which China Foresight has always done and which it continues to do. And I've been responsible for making sure that those happen. But then also there's a lot of support within the think tank itself in regards to individual initiatives. So the things which I have wanted to do myself and proposed, I've always got full backing of the entire team. For most things, they'll put you in touch with the right people to talk to. And also if opportunities come along for collaborations or similar things like that, then they're always flagged up and brought to you if other people in Ideas think that it may be a good opportunity. So, yeah, I think there's a very good balance in terms of personal initiative, but also continuous projects which are assigned. Yeah.
I'll just add a few words about my experience. How did I get to ideas? I was finishing my master's here at the LSE, International History, on the Cold War, Soviet bloc. Not really the height of employability, I think. So I was searching for something. And then one of my professors, who was working at Ideas, flagged this thing. There is a UK-wide project on the global Cold War, and especially the Eastern Bloc connecting with the Western Bloc in the 70s, in the long 70s. And I said, God, that's really up my alley. That was my thesis, you know, the long 70s, and so on, connectivity between the two blocs. And then I went and I was interviewed by the head of the project. And because I had two languages from the region, I had English, I had also French, so I could really be an asset. And for me, it was a momentous occasion. You know, so I got the, of course, unpaid, but who cares about that? And that's how I started. And as you don't said, you start on one thing, you know, you do your thing there. You do it well, maybe, and then things open up. You know, so at some point, I got the opportunity to create a program. So the idea was there, and they needed someone. And I was there on the Eastern Bloc, so knowing the region, knowing the history, and so on. So I got an offer. Would you like to build this up? And it's a lot of work, you know, building it from nothing. But then again, I came with a large network of people, you know, people I knew, people that were interested in cooperating. I used to work in the Foreign Service back in Romania, so immediately I capacitated those people, and they were very interested on a regional network. I worked in an auction house. I didn't know it would help me here, but I got it was managing a program on Central and Southeast European art. So you get to know people. It's very important. So all these assets, which I didn't really think they would be very useful, you know, studying the Cold War history, really proved indeed very useful. And it's a wonderful environment because it's very fluid, but in a good way. So things happen. This person brings something to the table, then another one comes with an idea, and you need something. You approach your colleagues, you know, brainstorm. You find all sorts of things you can do together. So it's a very lively place. It's a lot of work. Every day something happens, you know, and you're part of events, part of research, part of so many things. It's a very good place to be. It gives you opportunity, and yeah, a lot of pleasure in it. And the money, of course. So much money. Let's take two questions.
Hi, Ron. Came undergrad here. More on that doing well. Which attribute would you say that makes a difference between like just doing the job and making like terrific achievement?
Yes.
Hi, I'm doing a master's in media at LSE. I just wanted to ask, say for example, after my master's, I want to work as a research associate at LSE Ideas, but like from home, back home in India. So what are the possibilities of doing that, and what kind of project can a media student be part of, and what's the process like? What qualifications do I need to have, or like, what's the process? Yeah, thank you.
So let's start with the first one. Would you like to address?
I mean, I think generally what counts is doing well rather than just doing the job. I think it's the same across any job that you might find yourself in. So if you're assigned a project, try and go beyond what you were told to do in some way or form, whether that means, I don't know, if you're organizing an event, trying to seek out speakers beyond the ones that you've been told to invite already, or if you've been told to finalize a report, try and, I mean, don't add stuff without someone telling you to, but if you can enhance it in some way, or find certain outlets through which it could be released and reach more people. I think it's, yeah, generally the same across any job you find yourself in. Try and go beyond in any, seek out opportunities to go beyond what you've been told to do.
I think you are allowed in our institution to have a lot of initiative. So you can, you're not micromanaged. So you have so much freedom to experiment with proposals and projects and so on. Of course, at some point you get fine-tuned because you might, you know, overdo it. But that's a very, very good thing, I guess, to be allowed to experience, you know, to add as much as you can. And then, of course, everything has to be to fall into place. But I think that's a very good part of the ideas experience. Would you like to address the questions here?
Yeah, just to add to that, basically, I would say what's generally really appreciated, I think, within the think tank environment is if you're someone who likes to combine theory and practice. So it might be very obvious, but not everyone's aware of that. So it is actually very much appreciated if, yeah, you're smart and you know what you're talking about and you like to do research, but there's a reason why you didn't go into academia per se. Or, you know, you're good at organization and you're good at practical things, but you want to, you care about why you're doing that. So you like that combination. And I think as obvious as it sounds, not everyone likes that, which is also completely fine. There's people that really enjoy completely, you know, diving into something and really, you know, focusing on the theory. And there's people that really just like to organize things. And I think, yeah, that's maybe an important question to ask yourself. If you're thinking about something in a think tank, like, do I like both sides? And of course, then it depends again, you know, if you look at the three roles we're doing, there's also differences. So, you know, you can have more academic or more practical roles within a think tank. But I do think generally, like, sort of that broad interest in the world always benefits you. Cool. Yeah.
On your question, very good one. We do have an incipient program. It's called the Indo-Pacific program at LSE Ideas, and it's quite fresh. It's a few months old, so it's still going to feasibility challenges and so on. We have an LSE former master's here, Arjun. He is in India, and he's doing work trying to connect, to build up a network, and to see how he can, you know, kickstart the project. It's still a work in progress, so we're not sure how and if it will be, you know, a self propelling body, but we're very, very open and very hopeful. And please do keep in touch with LSE Ideas, because we try to, when the situation arises, to offer our former students at the LSE an opportunity to work with us.
Yes,
of course. Ah, it helps. It always helps. But it depends. It depends on the requirements of the position. So be updated, keep in touch. Anyone else? A question?
Hello, hello. My name is Jonas. I'm an undergrad studying management. And I was wondering, so you mentioned that frequently projects will be as short as 1.5 weeks, 2 weeks. So of all the projects that you guys have done at your time with LSE Ideas, what were your favorite ones? What were the ones you found the most interesting?
You don't?
Sure. I mean, my time at LSE Ideas is, I would say, still reasonably short. I started last October. But I think I've also managed to get a general, I've experienced a variety of events. I'd say, for me, the events that I've found the most enjoyable are the ones where there's quite a lot of interaction with your collaborators. So for me, that would be the speaking events I've organized, the panels. One in particular was the LSE Ideas panel we did, I think, end of January, discussing the U.S.-China relations and whether war is inevitable. I think sort of those panel events where you can get in some really good minds to discuss big questions, I think that's what I've enjoyed the most so far.
Yeah, so I've been at LSE Ideas since October 2017. Maybe just to clarify, so I've basically been on two projects, as we call them, since the beginning, and I'm still on those. So it's basically like the Derrinder Forum is one of those. So it looks at the future of Europe, as broad as that is. And the other one is called the UN Business and Human Security Initiative, which is part of the broader UN project within LSE Ideas. So within those two projects, I've been on different smaller projects. But it's a very good question. You know, what have I enjoyed the most? I think what I really liked at the UN project, I've mentioned it before, but because it's so young, has been outreach. I think particularly at one point, it was actually but a bit of a sad reason. My boss, Dr. Mary Martin, was on a sick leave, which meant that either some things were not going to happen or I had to step in. And so she asked me what I, you know, wanted to do for a situation. And there was one thing where she was going to give a workshop at the One Young World Summit in The Hague, which is this big conference for young leaders. So a bit scary, but I took over and did that together with our partner. And that was really great. That was, you know, actually maybe a little bit above my above my level. I mean, it went well, but that is sort of exciting, I think, about things like environment, because it's relatively small. You know, you get these opportunities sometimes. And I think for the Derrinder Forum, it's been, I notice I'm mentioning like all the travel, but that's exciting. It's been like going to conferences and presenting papers, or I chaired a panel at a conference in Paris, which was strange. Like one of the people on the panel was a former professor of mine from LSE. So things like that, you know, I think that was really sort of the exciting bits where you look around for a second and you think, oh, okay, I don't understand how I ended up
what
here.
What am I doing here?
It's fun. let's pretend I know what I'm doing. And I think that's sort of, yeah, again, that's exciting about think tanks, that it's relatively small, relatively horizontal, especially at LSE Ideas. So, yeah, that would be my answer.
I agree with that. It's the opportunities you get are amazing, especially feeling important. Well, you really don't think you're that important, but then you find yourself with all these people in panels. Yeah, it happened to me a month ago, I think. You remember, though? Yeah, it was a bit overwhelming, but at the same time, you feel good. So good because, again, you meet people, otherwise you wouldn't meet, or they wouldn't, I wouldn't say give you the time of day, but they wouldn't engage with you otherwise, maybe, because they lack time, they lack so many things, you know, factoring in. But then, when you have this institution behind you, you know, the business cards goes a long way. You know, when you're attached to this institution, it's like you appreciate it from the start, in a way. You know, you have an impact. So you must have done something well to get there. And you meet very interesting people. The dinners, the events, you know, you sit next to your Cold War idols. You know, you're reading their books and so on. Like, wow. Tell them about Gorbachev, you know, how is he like a man? And yes, you go back to your country or somewhere, you know, you just, those people, they kind of look at you in a different way now, you know, because you become important in a way, and you're credited more. And so many interesting, you know, encounters and events happen from this being part of this institution.
I would add to that as well. I totally agree. You get exposed to people you wouldn't ordinarily be able to meet. But on top of that, also, I think one thing I've really enjoyed working at a think tank is that you bring together people who wouldn't usually meet, which I think is incredibly important for policymakers, for any people. I mean, an exchange of ideas of people who wouldn't usually sit in a room together, I think, is very important. And I think one example of that is one of the breakfast meetings which China Foresight organized last year. We had a room full of academics, industry leaders, and policymakers. So you had sort of leaders from the UK digital entertainment industry to China academics to trade commissioners. And I think not one person didn't leave the room that day without knowing something which they didn't know when they entered. And for me, that's been very enjoyable, sort of seeing this, seeing people gain a perspective which they didn't see before, and knowing that that hopefully improves their work.
Anyone else? Yes.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm an undergrad here at LSE. So my question is for Gideon, I guess. So since you're currently studying at LSE, I'm just wondering how is it like doing research alongside studies, and where does the opportunity come from, and how do you find the balance and what the benefits of it? Yeah, thank you.
Right. So actually, I would say I haven't been able to do deep research just because of the time that I've been here. It's still only several months. And also, like you said, I am a student. There's a million other things on the side which also have to get done. And it's something I regret, and I wish I could have had a couple more. I think it was a question of time. I think in terms of finding a balance, it was sort of a matter of trying to figure out the maximum amount of impact that I could have while still having everything else going on. So trying to find opportunities in terms of the projects that I could do, and then grabbing onto those opportunities, making sure I did them, whilst also having everything else going on. Yeah.
Any final questions?
So from what I gather, it all sounds like a very sort of inclusive experience. You come in, you build your network. That's also how you get to work on your own projects. You get to build the think tank itself by pulling in public and private sector organization individuals. But I guess on the other side, are there any experiences you've had which haven't been so fun, perhaps due to sort of organizational objectives of the think tank itself constraining your work, working with other, you know, people that in the think tank or with other people you're trying to pull into the organization? Give some light to that.
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. It's important, I guess, to give you guys a full picture. And even though I think generally I am really enjoying all the different facets of the work, I guess it's like to every positive thing, there's also sort of, it can also switch towards negative, if you know what I mean. So, for example, the fact that we're, you know, young and so innovative and so flexible can also be difficult. As you mentioned in the beginning, I interned at Chatham House, very established institution. Of course, there's some very big advantages to that as well. You know, when you're more established, it might be easier to find your way into new contacts. You have sort of a more established network. In a way, it's sort of, you know, a nice warm feeling. It's a bit like easier. I think that is sometimes challenging about being a small think tank. You really have to fight your way in sometimes. And some it helps, I think, to have the LSE name in there. It's true, because people won't know ideas. They will know LSE. So it gives us a foot in the door. But we still need to prove ourselves, which can be fun, but can be challenging. And I think another thing to realize, I personally did not mind that much, but I was surprised by still how much of your time goes to administration and organization. I think that's just something that, you know, might be important to mention, because some people think, oh, think tanks, you're just thinking the whole day. And I think, again, I don't know even if it's negative, but it is, you know, I've had weeks where I literally, all I did was just, you know, organizing stuff, emailing, calling. And if that's not your kind of thing, then, you know, it might be better to really, for example, do a PhD and really dive into that. Not that it's either or, but, you know, so maybe that's something. But yeah, nothing really horrible, I think. Yeah. And maybe the point just generally that it is an insecure world. But I think, I mean, our generation, it's like every job is insecure, yeah. You know, because I've had friends say, oh, think tank industry, it must be really hard. And I think it has been a little bit harder than average. Mm. I do think, you know, if you find a permanent contract at a big consulting company, that is more secure. But at the same time, times are changing, especially in London. You know, it's so normal to be on a temporary contract that I don't even really think that that's a huge exception to other sectors.
I don't think I can really add anything else. I think that's a pretty comprehensive assessment. I mean, my experience since October has pretty much been entirely positive. I don't think I can really find any major faults, even if I tried. So, yeah.
Final chance. Anything, anyone? Well then, I think we should adjourn. Thank you so much for coming and listening to us and for all the nice questions. Hope you're leaving with some, good feedback. And otherwise, if anyone else has questions, we can spend a few minutes in the breakout area and just chat them away. otherwise, yes, that's all. Thank you so much for coming tonight. Thank you.